This week, we have a real live American with us. Not only that, it's our favorite kind of American. Smart. Just like in the movies. We're going to ask him the question all of Canada is asking.
What in the fiery pit of hell is happening in the USA?
Welcome to Politics is Broken with Brittle Starr and Lisa B. Canadian and global politics unspun. Are you sitting comfortably? Good. Then we'll begin.
Hi there. Welcome to Politics is Broken. My name is Brittle Starr.
My name is Lisa.
And you may have noticed we have a guest with us, like we said at the top of the show. The amazing Eric Hamm. He's a best-selling author and former congressional staffer in the U.S. Congress. He served as a contributor to TheHill.com, Washington diplomat. He's host of The Election Show with Sherry Jacobus. And he lives in Washington, D.C., one of my favorite places. Eric, thank you so much for wasting your Saturday morning to record this with us.
It's so good to be with you guys. Thanks so much for having me.
I'm very excited to have you here for a number of reasons. One, I'm a big fan of your, of course, the CTV News political analyst that they have on when they need to get the informed American perspective on stuff that's happening. And I love those hits you do. I told that I gushed praise in your general direction.
That's too kind. Thank you.
And it's just one of the things I think, especially being a Canadian, that I appreciate a lot. I think, Lisa, you might agree, mm-hmm. is when we hear American voices, it's that are smart and informed and intelligent. It's like, oh, thank God. Thank God.
They still exist.
Yes, exactly.
It gives us that hope. Like, we like that.
But I'm a big fan. Is the first reason. The second reason that I'm excited that you're here is that I think a lot of people in Canada, we jokingly said that the title of the show is, you know, what the hell is happening in the USA? But it's true. I think a lot of Canadians can't understand why it's happening, how we got to this point, how it's gotten all so crazy, how it seems like the Trump administration is so willing to just burn everything to the ground. I don't get it. We have so many questions. I don't even know where to start. I guess the first question, the really big, big, broad question I'll start with is the world overreacting to what Trump is doing and the administration's doing?
Absolutely not. And many Americans are feeling it. And of course, many Americans feel powerless to what is happening. You know, this week there was a hearing on the Hill. And it was Republican Senator John Kennedy that asked the Treasury Secretary, Scott Bissett. He said, if hypothetically, if Canada lowered all of its tariffs on the United States to zero, so if they basically zeroed out all tariffs on all goods coming from Canada into the United States, would the United States reciprocate to allow for American companies to have their goods go into Canada on zero tariffs? Would the United States reciprocate? And Bissett's answer was an unequivocal no, we would not do that. And so I think for the first time, we now see that this administration not only has moved beyond looking at Canada as an unequal partner, that somehow the United States was above and that Canada needed to be subservient. But I think for the first time, we're now seeing this administration views Canada as a threat, and it's treating it as such. It's no longer an ally. It's no longer a partner. It's no longer a friend. They see that, and I think for the first time, they're becoming afraid, recognizing, particularly heading into CUSMA, Canada has leverage. But aside from that, President Donald Trump, I think, has always kind of taken what his base does for him, and it emboldens him, and he somehow thinks that he can parlay that same boorish, bullying mindset and attitude onto the rest of the world, and they will somehow endear or accept that. And I think for the first time, the president is recognizing that simply won't happen.
We all take just a deep breath. This just came to me as you were speaking. like, we like to believe that we are a threat because we have a lot of things that the U.S. wants, but that we are slightly different. Is it because the rest of the world loves us and has not so great an opinion of the U.S.?
Are you asking if the USA is jealous?
Yeah, like, are
that's
jealous?
What it sounds like.
Are they jealous of us?
No, not at all. I think when Trump came into office, I think he had a very loathsome attitude towards the former Prime Minister Justin Trudeau. Mm-hmm. He knew that Trudeau had mocked him in the past, and I think he wanted to take every opportunity to take digs at the former Prime Minister. You know, we have to remember, we're talking about a man and Donald Trump who oftentimes is viewed and seen as more of a child than an adult. And so a lot of times, you know, he can engage in the, you know, schoolyard antics. But I think also the president certainly, I think, thought more highly of the power that he wields and that ability to exert that power on the rest of the world. For example, I think he thought Greenland would simply lay down and Denmark and the rest of NATO would just allow a U.S. takeover of the island. And I think, of course, he was very emboldened by what he did in Venezuela, thinking, okay, the rest of the world is simply going to allow this. And I think what we're seeing with Prime Minister Carney, while Donald Trump certainly, I think up until recently, had the utmost respect for Prime Minister Carney, that respect did not actually extend to the rest of the country. He still very much saw Canada as a nation that should just be part of the United States, no different than Hawaii or Puerto Rico or Guam or some other territory of the United States, U.S. Virgin Islands. Canada should just be part of. And of course, a lot of that is steeped in his.
Say it.
In his racism. Yeah. He sees Canada as a largely white nation, and how wonderful will it be to have more, given the fact that the United States is becoming more multicultural, it's becoming more brown, and what better way to balance that than to have a country of 40 million people, majority white, also now part of the United States. And I'm not saying this to be pejorative. It's just that we have heard Donald Trump say, why can't we have more people coming from Norway? Why can't we have more people coming from Scandinavia? Why do we have to have people coming from shithole countries?
Yeah.
Now, you say Norway, Scandinavia, but then you say a shithole country, but you don't name it. Well, he did actually name a shithole country. He named Somalia as a shithole country. And so I think that tells you who he is, that tells you what he wants to see, and that tells you what he believes that America should be. And so he wanted that for the United States. But unfortunately, what we're seeing here is Prime Minister Carney continues to, I think, outmaneuver this administration at every single turn.
There's a couple of things that, and what you're saying there, that stand out to me. One is, first of all, as a Canadian, I like the flattering use of CUSMA as opposed to USMCA, which is great. Because, I mean, yes, it's CUSMA. It's right there. You can just say it.
Well, you know, I've gotten so used to saying that from being on air with CTV. And it's so funny because I was out last night with friends here and I said CUSMA. And I said, oh, my God, I'm speaking like a Canadian. And I'm an American. And they were like, because they looked at me like, the hell is CUSMA? And I was like, I'm sorry, USMCA. They were like, okay.
Emperor's New Groove. You're not familiar with the film? The poison for Kuzma. That stands out. And then also, you know, what's funny to me about Trump thinking he could maybe open the door to immigrants who are largely white, ignoring the fact that people from Norway, people from Scandinavia, people from Canada, apart from a pocket of people, are largely pretty left-leaning group. They're not going to be that keen. Like, sure, we'd like to. I often say I love going to the U.S. on holiday. I don't want to stay. As a Canadian, I don't have to stay in America. It's like, to me, it's like going to Disney World. You go to Disney World and the security guy who's like 85 years old checks your bag and you're like, I can't wait. I'm going to have an amazing time. He looks me in the eye and he can tell by looking me in the eye, I am not going to move into Disney World. In about 8 hours, I'm going to leave poorer but happier, maybe a little tired. But I'm going to be, I've had a great day. Thanks so much. Take my money. See you later. And that's fine. Is it with that in mind, ignoring the fact that just because people are white doesn't mean that they're right wing as such, or Republican leaning. Is it because he's not very bright, or is it because he's been badly informed? Where's the logic in that?
Well, I think it also goes back to Greenland and the fact that we saw just how vocal not only Greenlanders were and Denmark and all of Europe, that they did not want to be a part of the United States. The president simply doesn't care.
Mm.
And I think that's what's so important about this. He doesn't care that Canada doesn't want to be part of the United States, that Canada does not lean his way politically. And not to say nothing of the fact that should you actually incorporate Canada into the United States politically, that would be the death knell for your party, because none of these people are going to be supportive of your party. They would actually be more ideologically leaning to the left or become just independent, which means you would not be president anymore. And I don't think he understands. And it's not so much that he doesn't understand it. He just doesn't care.
Doesn't care.
And I think he doesn't care. And I think he would just believe that he could take credit because he has expanded the nation. He's made the nation whiter. And for him, that's the win.
There's a quote here that I pulled before the show of yours, and I thought, wow, that is a smoking quote. And I thought I didn't believe it at first. I had to go looking twice to make sure it was actually your quote. Canada, like Greenland, is just too attractive in the eyes of an aging, imbecilic ruler, ignorant to reality, and even less moored by norms and standards. Yowza.
Yeah, it sounds like something I would write.
It flows off the tongue.
I'm surprised the editors actually allowed that one to get through.
Well, I'm glad they did, because I think that's part of the thing that drove me nuts about as we get to the question of how do we get to these times, why hasn't he been stopped, is there was a lot of pussyfooting, a lot of like beating around the bush, a lot of like, let's not say it, let's not call them lies, let's not call it racism. And I think it was an effort for some sort of etiquette or protocol or pleasantries. And I think that was a huge part of how America has gotten to the stage it's at now, where no one was really kind of willing, it seemed like no one was really, really willing to call this stuff out just bluntly. Like, wait a minute, this guy's an idiot and he's a racist. And no, like, what are we doing? Do you feel that I know the media gets beaten up all the time, but do you feel the media's lack of commitment to what was happening and calling it as it was is partly to blame for why America is where it is now?
I think we can certainly place a lot of blame at the feet of journalists and journalism. And I think very much like many of the institutions of the United States and the United States that are bulwarks or were supposed to be bulwarks or beacons of democracy, I think the press has also failed. I mean, look, even as you read that quote from me, I tell people all the time off the record or just in casual conversation that it is very, very difficult when I go on CTV to try to be diplomatic, to try to come off as balanced, to not be seen as a flamethrower. Because it's so hard to parse and measure your words when you know what you're seeing is pure hatred, pure racism, pure misogyny. But you can't come across that way, or you don't want to come across that way, because you don't want to be seen as not being somehow thoughtful of the issues themselves, and you don't want to seem personal. And so it is a struggle. And so I would imagine that many of my colleagues here in the United States probably feel that very same way.
We always have the question because, I mean, it's the same thing here. You know, we see during question periods, we see when there's pressers and journalists are asking questions. And those of us, you know, sitting at home are like, well, why didn't you ask that? Or why didn't you push on this? And I think a lot of us understand that you have to sort of be cordial in order to get invited back so that you can get the information and pass it along. And we've certainly seen, you know, I refer to her as Blondie, but Carolyn Leavitt just attacking journalists, right? Like, just, they haven't even finished their question and she's just going right into them. So is that part of it too, is that in order to be able to kind of get in there, you have to play the nice guy every once in a while?
Well, no, because actually that's part of, I think, the Fourth Estate, why I think it's broken is because now you have people who just want access. Access not only just gives you, quote, access to power, but it also gives you access to the ability to enrich yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, you bring in more on the lecture circuit. The book deals, you know, have additional zeros added to them. And it just creates this brand for people. And they're willing to actually, I think, trade off. Oftentimes, their journalistic integrity for that access. And again, and Donald Trump certainly knows that and recognizes that. In fact, if you go back to when Obama was in office, you know, we didn't know it at the time, but Obama elevated the corporate media in the United States because it was the first time in our nation's history that you had an African-American as president. And to be clear, Barack Obama did not actively or aggressively try to court the media. It was just that he in and of himself was just, he was historic simply because of who he was. But he, as president of the United States, like past presidents, he certainly tried to comport himself as a head of state. And he certainly recognized the weight and the heft of the office. But that did not change the fact that millions of Americans and people abroad wanted to know everything about Barack Obama, what he did, how he moved his family. And so he was a cash cow for corporate media. And there was certainly a fear when he was leaving, what happens to all of the money that we've been able to generate? Because now more people are watching than ever because they were just curious about this history-making man and his family. And then, of course, when Donald Trump came on the scene, you know, he certainly allowed them to be able to maintain that. When Biden came in the office, Biden basically eschewed the press. Hated them, loathed them, did not want to spend much time with them, went home every weekend. He was boring. He wasn't fun. He did not relish engaging in the back and forth. He never cared if they didn't know anything about what he did. I think it was one of the biggest flaws to his presidency. But with Donald Trump in office, you know, he gives the press constant fodder, as we see. I mean, there is never a dull moment. We work every single day because even in the middle of the night, he's tweeting something outlandish, racist, or just certainly off the rails. And oftentimes, before we can even talk about it, the first thing we have to ask ourselves is, can he do that? And so that's what we have to talk about. Quick story here. When this post came out of Donald Trump depicting the Obamas as apes, I was asked by BBC to come on air and discuss it. But I said, guys, is this actually real? Are we sure this isn't AI generated?
Yeah.
Are we sure this isn't a deep fake? Mm-hmm. Because I'm not coming on air to talk about this if this isn't real, knowing and recognizing that Donald Trump literally has four decades of racist behavior. But I still was hesitant to talk about this because I didn't even believe it was real.
That's a big part, I think, of how the U.S. has kind of gotten to the state it's in currently, is because there is that, as I mentioned, like with from journalists, there's kind of this cordiality, as Lisa mentioned, and this sort of protocol and stuff and etiquette and wanting access and all that kind of stuff. That's kind of one thing. But there's also like, I mean, I remember reading, of course, Steve Bannon saying, just we flood the zone with shit. And we just put as much stuff out with three horrendously unbelievable things out a day, at least, if not 30, if not 300. And no one will be able to keep up. No, it'll be, and it's worked tremendously well because there's, I mean, we've talked about this recently in a previous episode where a big part of what I do is make comedic sketches. And for a long time, I was doing a lot of political comedic sketches, largely to do with Canada. But I would occasionally touch on the U.S. as well. But it got to a point where I was like, by the time I've written something, something more bizarre, something more weird, something more horrendous has come out and you can't believe it. And that's a really good example of that video that was posted on his account, on Trump's account, depicting the Obamas as apes. It was like, exactly that. Is this real? Is this true? And everyone asking themselves that, despite the fact, is exactly as you said, we've got decades of demonstrated proof and behavior that was like, you don't have to doubt yourselves, people. This is real. This is of course, this is what he would do. But then there seems to be no accountability for it. There seems to be not, like, it's just kind of, it's nothing. It was a staffer. No, I didn't make a mistake.
But it's like, okay, so we all know the racism, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then I think we could, like, clearly people are like, but is he that racist? Like, racism is racism, right? Like, I mean, it just, and I don't know why anybody was shocked by it. And whatever excuse that was given of, oh, no, it was a cinematic, like, bleh, whatever. But because it's constant, are people now in a position, and certainly Americans, are they in a position of going, well, that can't be true, right? Like, because it's so bad that you have to self, like, you have to doubt yourself because the horrors of what's happening are just too horrific.
Yeah, I mean, I was doubting, and I'm sure others were, but also too, I think what we saw is, for the first time, I think, in that post, and even after a day, the president, you know, saying, you know, I didn't make a mistake. I think what we see here is a man who, for the first time, I think, is owning the racism and admitting to it and owning up to this is who he is. And I think what is also equally damaging about that is now you have the office is now attached to that racism. And because it happened during Black History Month, which is a time when people of color in this country celebrate tremendous achievements of where they came from and how much they have done to embody, you know, the values of this country. And now we see that there's still not only so much more work to be done, but there is still this tremendous resistance to accepting or owning the full worth of people who don't look like Donald Trump, even when some of those people, or at least one of those people, was and occupied the same office that he does.
I think that's one of the sad parts for me is that I've never mentioned this before, but I was invited to the White House in 2016. I'm just saying that because I'm drastically insane. And the Obamas invited me to the White House, and it was a very big deal for me. We were there for the arrival ceremony of Justin Trudeau, and they did the thing on the White House lawn, and it was great. It was awesome. And as a Canadian, I got to spend the day, you know, in the Eisenhower building, and it was really cool. But it was because I had respect for the office. I have lots of issues with various parts of American politics and government. However, I respected the office. It's like, this is a big deal. This is an important thing. Lots of important people have come through here. It's also important for me as a Canadian to represent Canada the best I can and to be as polite as possible and to be, just respectful of the office. And I think that's all been wiped out. Like I think if someone invited me to the White House post-Trump, post-Republicans, some Democrats get back in or something, I would accept. I don't think it would have nearly the same impact on me as it did back then. And I think that's a real shame. It's terrible.
No, I think you're absolutely right. And I think this is the challenge that we have as a country are facing right now. And I say this all the time because, you know, Donald Trump said this and it's true. But also, I think there's a lot that was left out. Donald Trump once infamously said that he could shoot someone on Fifth Avenue and not lose any support.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
No one knew that was plan at the. that was a framework.
I think it actually spoke to just how well Donald Trump knew not necessarily the country, but the people who supported him, and also the people that he mirrored. And oftentimes we try to make Donald Trump an anomaly, as if he is some other, you know, that he is this unique individual, and that what he does or how he comports himself is just so vastly different than what we're used to, and that maybe we don't understand it, and we're still having a difficult time coming to terms or coming to grips with it. But I actually think that's giving us a pass, because I think Donald Trump is quintessentially American, and he can hold that office even after being convicted of 34 felonies, even after being impeached twice, even after fomenting an insurrection to try to overthrow the country, even after his blatant racism, even after his blatant misogyny, even after being named in the Epstein files, you know, over 1,000 times, because at the end of the day, Donald Trump doesn't just represent us. He is us. Donald Trump is what an American is. He is psychopathic. He is demented. He is all of the things about America that we have tried to hide under the carpet. We have tried to cover with our propaganda of how we are the shining city on the hill. But there are still these things about us, because we always like to say that we are a country that is aspirational. We aspire to be these great things, but we have never said that we have arrived at that place. And there's something that's keeping us from getting there. And I would argue that it's Donald Trump, and it's people in America that are Donald Trump. You know, there are tens of millions of Donald Trumps that make up this country. And so we need to accept that. And I think for many Americans, we don't like to recognize that about ourselves, about the people who we actually empower to lead us, to guide us, to actually be the face of who we are. But this is somebody that we put in power twice. And I think America, even the press, has a hand to play in this. They will deny it, you know, forever. But we all played a role in making Donald, not making Donald Trump, but ensuring that Donald Trump is the face. Donald Trump is the representative of who we all are.
That's none of the stuff we could say.
No. Well, we could, but...
We're thinking it. No, we're not thinking it.
You know what's funny about that statement is that, you know, when the election was happening, and even before the election, and you would see whomever go to these MAGA rallies and talk to these individual MAGAs, and they would all generally say how much Donald Trump cares about them and wants to make it. And it was always perplexing to me about this, like, idolization that they have of him. And it's like, is that because they feel that they will be closer in proximity to his power or whatever he has? But you just explained it. He is Americans. And so that's the relation, right? They see themselves in him, which is terrifying. But you explained 8 years to me in 2 minutes. So I thank you for that.
I think you're being slightly harsh on Americans. I think, and no one needs to come to the defense of Americans currently. But I think that I think that Donald Trump is a reflection of the worst tendencies of being an American. He is the dark, dank core of individualism and capitalism and all that kind of stuff. And I get made fun of here by Lisa because Lisa's pretty lefty compared to me. Don't get me started on unions. but I think that, you know, there's this, I speak highly of a number of Americans and American friends that I have, and they all have that individualistic can do, let's give it a go, let's try, let's make things happen. And I've said numerous times that Americans have brought so much good to the world, tremendous good to the world. I feel that Trump is just the reflection of the absolute worst part of America. And I think he's clued into the fact that he realizes it doesn't matter because everybody's just trying to get by. Everyone thinks they're going to be rich. Everyone wants to be rich. Everyone wants to live the American dream, whatever that happens to be, usually involving money, affluence, power. And you can do whatever you need to do to get there. It doesn't matter what you do. And I think I guess the question that leads after that is like, how can that be stopped? It must have an expiry date. It must burn out.
You know, I think that's always one of the perplexing contradictions of America, because you're right. America is a great country. America and Americans have done great things, contributed tremendously, not only to its growth, but also to the world. Mm-hmm. But we also are a nation that allows over and over and over and over mass shootings in our country, even of small, helpless, innocent children. And we do nothing about it. And it continues to happen every single day. And we have the largest prison population in the world. We simply don't believe in rehabilitation. If we did, we would certainly do very better. We have the largest military. We are obsessed with hard power, and I'm not really sure why. But I think as a country, I think over the last 40, 50 years, something in us has hardened. And, you know, I think we don't have enough time to discuss here how we got here or why we are like this, but we are. And if you take someone like a Barack Obama, and we have to be clear about this, because the reason why Donald Trump came down that gilded escalator in 2015 announcing his run for president is because he felt embarrassed and humiliated by Barack Obama at that White House correspondence dinner.
God.
Some can make the argument or the case that Barack Obama, this trend-setting historic figure, Nobel laureate, is the reason for the rise of someone like Donald Trump. But that still does not negate the fact that both things can be true. Mm. Both men, good and bad, represent and embody who we are. Mm-hmm. And I think that is an unhealthy tension that the country is grappling with and facing right now, but it's still very much who we are.
Thanks, Obama.
It was still worth it, though. It was a good run.
It was a good run. It was. I still have my Obama M&Ms beside my bed. Shannon's got the picture of Eric and John Cryer, and I've got my box of Obama M&Ms.
Nice.
So how does... So it's all fine and well for Americans to be regretful, to be aware of the fact that it's all going to hell. Will it stop? What's the expiry date on this thing? Will it ever return to normal? And I'm air quoting that. How does America steer out of this dead man's curve to oblivion? Because it seems evident to me and to I'm sure a number of other people that you look at America and think your worth on the world stage is diminishing rapidly. Obviously, we're not selling, you know, American booze in Ontario here, across Canada, largely except for Saskatchewan, who are big softies for bourbon, probably. And, you know, there's lots of people not traveling to the U.S. anymore. We didn't go to the U.S. this year. I went down once to Atlanta for 24 hours, and I remember getting tons of shtick for that after I came back. People aren't going down to Florida for holidays. There's no denying the fact that, and if you look to Europe as well, that being American in that sense of Trump being a reflection of the worst tendencies of Americanism, you know, there's the cliches of American tourists in Europe. And I think America, the Europeans are now like, see, we were right. Told you we were totally right.
Told you so.
So how does America steer out of this?
I think
if you just start crying right now, I will cry too.
I think that's a very difficult question because, look, we have seen throughout the course of civilization, empires fall.
Mm-hmm.
We have seen that happen. And I think the United States is perhaps it's time as the dominant power is sunsetting. And we have been on this downward trajectory for quite some time. And I think what makes it so difficult for us to be able to turn this around is our own internal institutions are so weak right now. And even more so, we have turned on each other. In this country, we saw an attempted assassination of Donald Trump. We have seen the killing of Charlie Kirk. We have seen the attacks on elected officials in this nation. We have seen over and over where our elected leaders are constantly under threat.
Mm.
There are attempted kidnappings of governors. We see the way politicians talk to one another. They speak in very violent terms to one another. Political violence is now a normalized tool of how we engage with each other in terms of distribution of power. And all of that will have to change if the country is to actually go in a different course. And I'm not sure that the nation is ready to move in a different way right now. Because I think what we continue to see is a very dark, a very dreadful level of engagement. I mean, if you look at how Donald Trump talks about his enemies, he sees them as the threat. Donald Trump sees himself as the country, and he sees others as the threat. We just saw recently a journalist, Don Lemon, was actually arrested.
Mm-hmm.
So we are seeing every single day how those levers of power, how those machines of democracy have now been weaponized against democracy, against us. I mean, so we're under siege. And I think much of the country is not even aware that it's happening to them. Oh, yeah, sure. In places like Chicago, where you have ICE, or in Minneapolis, where they are right now, yeah, they may feel that way to a certain extent. But does the rest of the country feel that? Is the rest of the country doing anything to try to break off what they're saying? No, because the objective is fear. That is Donald Trump's signature policy now, fear, to make the rest of the world fear us. But what he really means is fear him. And then he also wants the very people who who elected him to also fear him. And I don't know if a nation can be great when it is consumed with fear.
I agree. Is it really going to come down to this? Is it going to come down to, as I often say, the Waffle House index style reality setting in, where it's like you go to the Waffle House and it's closed, and you're like, well, this is weird, and nobody's there because all the staff have been deported or whatever reasons it's closed, or they just can't afford to be there anymore. Do we have to wait until it affects essentially every American before you'll be able to pull out of the dive?
I don't know if it's so much does it have to happen to every American before you do something about it? Because that assumes that even if and when it happens to all Americans, they're actually going to do something about it.
Derek, that's not the answer I wanted.
But it's true. I mean, look, President Donald Trump, when he came into office, if we go back to George Floyd, there was a massive shift in the aftermath of the killing of George Floyd. And at that time, Donald Trump was president of the United States. Mm. But there was a major change in the country. There was more like a push to do better, to be better, to be aspirational. Mm-hmm. And since Donald Trump has come back into office, he has attempted to try to revert a lot of the changes. So there's no more DEI. There's no more elevating the history of resistance in this country by people of color, Native Americans, Latinos, Japanese, African Americans, what have you. Mm-hmm. Affirmative action is no longer a policy in this country, things like that. But now you had Donald Trump say, we needed ICE officers. We needed to engage because we need to go after the bad people, the bad illegals who are in this country. And that is why you had all of these armed agents descend on these American cities, quintessential American cities. But what we have seen in Minneapolis is the killing of Renee Good and Alex Pretty. Two people who certainly were not and are not the people who Donald Trump described as the bad people who are here illegally. Mm-hmm. These are actually quintessential Americans. They are people who most Americans probably espouse to be or see in themselves every single day. Mm-hmm. So it is happening to them. It's not happening to the George Floyds of the world. Mm-hmm. It is now the Alex Pretty's and the Renee Goods who are being gunned down in the streets by American law enforcement. So the question becomes, what are they going to do about it? Mm-hmm. Do they feel any sense of duty to change the trajectory of where the country is going? We see Donald Trump continuing to do things every single day that are not even incrementally damaging or destroying democracy. He's literally lighting dynamite, mm-hmm, to it. But I don't know if we're seeing an equal response or pushback from the country. So I'm not so sure, at least at this time, that the country is going to respond, or is actually, if it does respond in a way that is going to save the nation or continue to aspire to be that shining city on the hill.
There's two questions, and one is one leading into the other. One is, is it really, you mentioned Americans divided against each other, which it is person to person for sure. I think there's, when you look at what's happening with ICE and stuff, for sure. However, is it really a split down the middle of, you know, the 140 million people that voted or whatever it was, or 160 million people that voted? Is it really 80-80 or is it really 70-70? Or is it, as I'm assuming, there's the numbers on Trump's side are dwindling slightly because they're realizing this isn't what we wanted. This isn't what we asked for. This isn't what we thought we were going to get. And then following that up as well is I'm doing that thing that journalists do, and I'm not a journalist. Every time I see a journalist go, and another question. So just shut up. Just ask your one question. That's all you need.
Give him a minute. Give him a minute.
The second part of that is then people are pinning a lot of hopes on the midterms happening this year. Are there going to be midterms? Will it matter?
You know, I now have this digital show that I'm doing with my co-host, Sherry Jacobus. It's called The Election Show.
I feel that show's going to get more and more popular as the year goes on.
I hope you're right. But one of these central questions, and I said this on our first show, and there needs to be a whole show about this. Are there even going to be elections? Because we have already heard, and I said this on the show, Donald Trump is already now talking about nationalizing elections. We know that he has used Minnesota basically as hostage, saying, you give us your voter data information and we'll remove ICE agents from Minnesota. And so clearly, the president has already given away the ball game. Mm-hmm. This is all about trying to hold on and maintain power, which, again, if elections or free and fair elections are a hallmark and a guiding pillar of democracy, well, then I think what we're seeing right now is democracy is in a chokehold. And Donald Trump, I think, is continuing to try to snuff the life out of it. And he's doing it by trying to eliminate free and fair elections. And so I think that is the central questions that we just don't know the answer as to what's going to happen in November of this year. But rest assured, I think, and this goes back to your original question, how or what are Americans going to do to turn this around? I think how Americans respond this year, I think, is going to be, will say a lot about the direction in which the nation is going. And also to your first question about, is it split down the middle? Again, I think this speaks to where we are as a nation, because it's not just the people who voted that matter. Mm-hmm. They do, of course, because they're exercising their right. They're exercising their voice, which is what you want in a healthy democracy. But what about those who are eligible to vote, and those who are registered to vote? But we know for a fact that millions of Americans simply did not vote in the last presidential election. And so what does that say about a nation when you simply check out on the very institution that basically affords you freedom? Because as we know, freedom ain't free. It requires us to do something. And what we're seeing from tens of millions of Americans, they ain't doing it.
Lisa's doing that thing.
You guys didn't want to.
We wanted something happy, Eric. Come in some yucks. Listen, guys, don't worry. Next weekend, it's all going back to normal. Lisa, I was just going to say, Lisa's doing that thing where we have someone really smart and interesting on.
Stop having those live Americans on the show.
Exactly.
Go back to Canadians.
We wanted a smart American. We got one. There you go.
We went too smart. Damn it.
Too smart.
We're going to dial it back.
Middle of the road American.
Do you have any slightly dumber friends?
Make a list. Stuart and I have talked about this before. And I think we have slightly differings of opinion, but, you know, obviously in Alberta, I'm from Alberta. And so we have like the mini me version, leading our province, the mini Trump, same playlist, same playbook. We were seeing it mirrored. Obviously there's the separation talk and all that other garbage that goes with it, but I've always wondered, and I've always said for us, at least in Alberta, is that the leader is the figurehead, but there's a movement behind that leader that, regardless of who's at the podium, that movement is what has the traction to keep going, right? And I know there are many a joke about the longevity that this president may have, But what do you think? Do you think it is just Trump is the movement, or there's so much behind it that even if he should retire, is that going to put an end to it?
This is why I say Trump is us. Trump is simply mirroring a nation, because what Donald Trump has done is he has just galvanized a very potent political force that was always out there. And now he has just given them voice, and he's given them influence, and he's given them power. He's just taken it all for himself, but they are still there. And so you cannot separate Donald Trump from the people that he has galvanized, because we see that importance very much like, and I know I keep going back to, you know, the reason why I keep going back to Obama, because of course there was a very potent "Yes, we can" movement that catapulted Barack Obama to history as well. And now the question is, okay, where is that movement? Why is that movement not able to overcome the MAGA movement? But they are still reflections of this country, and they are us. And so, and I think that's the fight, that's the battle that we're seeing. And some people are leaving, some people are joining, and it's a very fluid process, but it's still very much Donald Trump, MAGA, it's all one and the same. And it will still be there, even if it's dormant, remains its relevance when Donald Trump leaves office, but it will still be there. It's just, what do you do with it? Can someone harness it and make it better? Can someone harness it and continue to make it a voice or component for ill? We don't know, but what we do know for certain is that it exists and it's there. And it has certainly shifted and changed the country.
I like that approach better. I like the idea that there's this movement of people, this sort of segment of the population in America that could be guided to better purpose. I think I like that idea. That's hopeful. That's the most hopeful thing you've said this whole damn show.
But it's true. I mean, but that's why politics is so important, because they only matter if you participate.
Yeah.
And it's how do you move people to participate? And I think you have to figure out how to reach people where they are to be effective. You know, Bill Clinton was always seen as the great communicator. Mm-hmm. He was someone who was able to move and galvanize people. Donald Trump has been that sort of figure, that once in a generation politician. Barack Obama was another one. We've seen politicians like that in the past. Are there politicians like that coming in the future before us right now? We don't know. Certainly, Kamala Harris had hoped to be that figure. It did not work out for her. I think that, again, that speaks to us as a nation, because I do believe there is still a sizable portion of this population, for whatever reason, is not ready for a woman to lead. And again, I think that speaks to who we are. You can interpret that any way you want to, but it does say something about us. I think that's up to the country and individuals to determine what it is, but it does speak to who we are as a nation. And where we go from here is anyone's guess. But if someone can galvanize the nation, and that's what we're always attempting to try to decide with these presidential elections every 4 years, is who's going to be that figure who will have that power, who can galvanize, you know, the majority, that actually this is the direction that the country wants to go in. And that direction, no matter good or bad, it speaks to us, it speaks for us.
There's that hope of galvanizing in a positive sense is good. I worry that the Americans will have to sort of experience way worse than it's happening currently in order to get to that point where they can come out of it. I think it sort of feels like the hope posters of the Obama campaign before he was elected. America was coming out of the 9/11 thing and the shock and the horror, the idea like, oh my God, this can happen here. This can happen in one of our largest cities. This is like, we are not immune to this terrorism that we've seen happen elsewhere in the world. And I think that people were kind of, it was kind of a dark time. And people wanted to come out of that with hope, and that was good. I feel that there's been so much, and America is not alone in that whole rage baiting culture of just anger as commerce, anger as currency, style of politics. But I'm hoping that people get tired of it. And I can't see how people won't get tired of this idea. I can't be angry all the time. I want someone to come out and tell me what's good. I want people to tell me, here's what we can do to make things better, as opposed to this is what's wrong. We know what's wrong. It's evident what's wrong. And I'm hoping that that also, encourages people, that the percentage of the population that didn't vote, who can vote but didn't vote, I feel those people, again, not just America, but in Canada as well, have been living fairly privileged lives with the understanding that whoever is in charge, doesn't matter what party it is, they're going to have respect for the office. They're going to do their best to take care of people. And I'll be okay. I might not be super happy about it. I might have to pay more taxes. I might have to pay less taxes, whatever the situation is. But generally, I'll be fine. And I think this is, for America, one of the first times where people are starting to realize, oh, there's no rules. All those checks and balances we were promised in 2016 don't exist. They're all gentlemen's agreements. They're all handshakes. That's it. There's no hard and fast law here to there's no bumper rails to bring everyone back into the lane, which is terrifying to me. We could talk to you forever. And I was going to say earlier that Lisa's doing that thing we have some interesting on where she just sits and watches the conversation.
Because there's so much, there's so much to talk about, and everything that's said, it's like, okay, but what about this? It's branches that are expanding, and everything touches everything else. Right. And
yeah,
again, we could go on for like 3-4 hours.
I'll give you two more questions, Eric, and then we'll let you go enjoy your weekend in lovely D.C. Maybe go to Old Ebbitt Grill, maybe for a late lunch. You know what I mean?
Yeah, maybe I'll go take lunches to the National Guard that walk around the city.
Yeah, there you go. That's nice. Hey. That's nice thing you do.
My civic duty. Yeah.
Exactly. Will U.S.-Canada relations ever return to, quote, normal? Is there even a shot of that happening, or is that gone?
Is there normal?
Okay. You know what? Here's what I'll say about that. And I'll give you something hopeful.
Thank God.
We have a president and we have an administration that just does not share a positive view of Canada right now. Mm-hmm. However, that is not reflective of the rest of the nation.
Mm-hmm.
Not only is it not reflective of the rest of the nation, it is not reflective of the rest of Donald Trump's own party.
Mm-hmm.
A number of lawmakers recognize that the diminished relations between Canada and the United States has been horrible for the United States. They recognize this, and especially those senators who represent border states, or where Canada is the largest trading partner for their particular state,
mm-hmm.
they recognize the value and the importance, and they desperately want to see this relationship fixed. Unfortunately, there's just nothing they can do to change the direction of where this administration is going, and that the break is real. And it's going to be there at least for the foreseeable future.
I'll finish up with another question here. As an American, you, not me, just making clear, make sure that's clear. I can't take that kind of pressure.
No, you don't need those comments coming in.
Exactly. So yourself as an American, what do you think Canadians can do in this current timeline that would be for the benefit of both Canada and also the benefit for America, the America, the good, the America that we want to see?
I think Canadians are doing it. I think when we saw Mark Carney on that stage in Davos, speaking with moral clarity and tremendous certitude and elbows out, I think many Americans could look at that and say, I hear you.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to that, we know that Canada is standing strong. They are not traveling to the United States. They don't want to come to the United States. And Canada is exercising, I think, its power and its independence. We know, even if you look at the trade between the two nations, Canada has been for decades heavily reliant on the United States. And I think for many of us, you know, we are very individualistic in terms of how we think in the United States. And looking at Canada now saying, it's time for us to take care of us, I think Americans respect that. Mm-hmm. I think Americans understand that. But also, I think Americans inherently, genuinely love Canada and love Canadians. What we're seeing from this administration is a shock to the system for us, but it's also deeply surprising.
Mm-hmm.
Because Americans have tremendous affinity and affection for Canada. I'm originally from Detroit, Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
As a college kid at the University of Michigan, you know, we would travel back and forth to Windsor all the time.
Sure.
It was something that was just baked into our lives. And what we're seeing now is something that is deeply damaging to us, because now there just seems to be an invisible wall, and most Americans are just wholly unfamiliar with this. And so to see Canadians saying, we're going to stand up for ourselves, we're going to look out for ourselves, we're going to build relationships, we're going to showcase to the rest of the world that we are what Americans have always thought we were, this shining city on the hill. I think Americans, not even privately, you know, are egging Canadians on, mm-hmm. like, do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because the goal is, if one day, hopefully, we find ourselves back to one another, Canada will be in a much stronger position, and we don't see that as a threat to America in the way that the administration sees it as a threat.
Well, that's a good place to end. Thank you so much, Eric. You've been a bit of a downer. but it's been good.
I'm so sorry, but I really appreciate it. I love that you guys have me on this show. Thank you so much. You asked for live Americans.
And we got one.
This is our life as Americans right now. We have to defend ape memes. We have to defend, you know, ICE agents killing, you know, just good everyday Americans. So life for us right now, you know, is not, you know, as it's not a bowl of cherries for us.
So final, very, very final question then. So what would from Canadians, what do you think Americans want to hear from Canadians, like, to them in regards to that situation that's happening currently? Meaning, should we be like, oh, we feel for you, buddy? Or should we be doing anything like that? Or
no, in fact, I've actually been surprised by the resilience, because, you know, we always say, you know, Canada nice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you all are nice to us. I mean, like, we love our guns. We shoot and kill everybody over here. You guys are nice over there. But you guys are, like, showing a level of strength. And you know, and I, quite frankly, when we look at it, we're like, oh, I didn't know. You know, I didn't know Canadians could be so gangster. I mean,
we're so not guys, that nice. We're not
yeah, exactly.
that nice.
It's all passive aggressive, Eric. It's all so passive it's just... aggressive.
No, and I love it. You know, because, you know, you guys did not take this fight. You guys did not start this fight. And quite frankly, this is not something that Americans even wanted. Americans did not want a fight with Canada. Why would we ever want to fight Canada? America typically does like to fight the rest of the world, but we've never picked a fight with Canada. And there's a reason for that. And it's quite frankly, this is actually a fight that was picked by one. It was not a nation that is actually trying to fight Canada, trying to prolong a fight with Canada. This is all basically a person of one who is engaging in this. And the United States is secret. And I think many Americans, you know, are secretly, or not even so secretly, I think are openly enamored by what we're seeing, particularly from your prime minister and from your country.
Well, I can't wait for you guys to fix things down there. So just send me a text when it's done, because I can't wait to get back. Can't wait to get back to all those
all
nice spots
clear.
In America.
Let yeah, us exactly. know when
it's all good.
Clear.
Come on
yeah.
down.
Yeah, when it's all fixed and over, you know, we'll have you guys down. We'll go to Old Ebbon Grill. We'll
yeah.
some
oysters. There you go.
Right, there you go.
That's what we want. So thank you, everyone, for watching Politics is Broken. Of course, you can find us on your favorite podcast platform or platcorn. I don't know what that is. But if you have a platcorn, maybe we're there.
That doesn't sound good.
It could be. It's possible. You can find us on your favorite podcast platform or, of course, on the Substack TV app or on YouTube as well. If you're a paid subscriber, thank you very much. You get to watch on, without ads and all that kind of stuff, which is great. And it keeps us doing what we're doing. I mean, Eric's fee is massive. I don't know what his fee is, actually. God, I'm hoping he's doing this for free.
With the conversion? Like, oh, my God.
Oh, my God, with the exchange rate?
Shit.
It's already up 38%. Thank you so much, everyone. Take care of yourselves. We'll see you next week.
Bye, everybody.
You've been listening to Politics is Broken with Brittle Starr and Lisa B. Remember to like, follow, subscribe, and comment. And don't forget to check out brittlestarr.com for more.